this tape may not be reproduced in any form without express written permission from Nationwide Distribution Corporation.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
This is the world broadcast of Imam Waris Deen Muhammad Speaks, the program that's dedicated to human dignity and justice. And now, Imam Waris Deen Muhammad.
I hope God bless us with guidance and understanding. I hope He bless me to be able to express my thoughts clearly to you. And I hope He bless you to receive my thoughts in the proper way. I don't intend any mockery. I don't intend any destructive criticism. So if you might hear that or feel that, please know that I don't intend that. Everything that I do and say is for the sake of improving upon us and not merely criticizing.
Dear beloved Muslims, visitors, friends, greetings of peace to you. Assalamu alaikum. Praise be to Allah, the guardian evolver, the cherisher and sustainer of all the world. I bear witness that nothing is worthy of worship except Him alone, and I bear witness that Muhammad is His servant and His messenger. I thank Allah that I was able to come out here for the holiday week. Holiday season. I hadn't planned to come out here, really, but some matters came up that I felt were urgent and required my presence here at home. So I came home, really, to be with my family, and then I said, boy, this is Jumu'ah and this is Christmas. And Christmas fell on Jumu'ah, you know. So I said, I better prepare, because he just might want me to speak. So when I got here, first thing he said, would you give the Jumu'ah for us today, buddy man? And I said, yes. And I was very happy to be here. And now again, on this Sunday, I have another opportunity to speak with you. And I thank Allah again. You know, I have come to really like or enjoy the study of words, language. And every so often, I run into a word that catches my attention. And I just work with it and work with it to see what's to it. And usually there's more to it than meets the eye. You know, we are used to the term lemon. We know that what a lemon is. A lemon is fruit. A bitter tasting fruit. But we like it. When I was a child, whenever I saw a lemon, I thought they were getting ready to make sour water. They call it lemonade. We call it sour water, you know. And after I got older, I learned that the word lemon had another meaning. It meant a letdown. A disappointment, something that ain't what you thought it was. And I bought a car and it was a lemon too. And I should have known better because it was yellow. They had it in the showroom, it was already yellow. the dealer was trying to tell the customer something. So I bought it. It sure enough turned out to be a lemon. And I wonder, I said, well, I began to think about the word lemon. I said, why would they use a lemon to convey that kind of meaning? So I started thinking. I looked the word up in the dictionary, tried to find its history, where the word came from, where its origin is, you know. And before I finished my search, I just came to the conclusion that the word must have been influenced by Semitic usage. Semitic usage is Jews, Arabs, and others. In fact, many people, the people of the Middle East, most of them speak or have the Semitic influence in the language, or the language are Semitic. And I say lemon. I say, what do they say? I know what they're saying now. They're saying that moral consciousness in a person is worthless, a disappointment. Because, you know, one who feels regret, if he feels sorry for his wrong, then in our language, that kind of self or makeup in a person is lauwama, repentant nature in the person. Lama means to accuse, and one who feels the burden of accusation is that kind of self that feels the burden of accusation is lauwama. And you know the sound un can easily be put to any Arab word or Semitic word. It doesn't change the word. It just means that it's used in a certain way grammatically. So lame, lama, you know the word lame? Lame means crippled. And lame means one blamed, or accused, feeling accusations, the burden of accusation, you see? So I trace the word back there. And look now, if that's true, then what are they saying when they say, when the southern people told us that lemonade was sour water? Sour water. See, it's sour water. And all the southerners drank sour water. And our folks who came from the south, they drank sour water too, you know, just love sour water. Now you think of sour water. Sour is a pig too. Just spelled different. Sour is a pig, you know. Sour water. Water for the pigs. See? Sour water. Water for the pigs. Now, I'll go back to what lemon means. It means moral consciousness. Of the nature to feel burden when you are accused. Conscious person. Conscientious person. You see? Now, how do I know I'm right in this thinking? Because I traced other words back and I found they say the same thing. Bilal refers to the sensitive nature of the human soul, the name Bilal. In the Bible, Belial, spelled a little different, is called a worthless thing, something having no use, no worth, you see? So why would they call that something has no worth? Sensitivity in the soul is the nature of moral consciousness. When the soul is not sensitive, there's no moral. How can you be morally conscious and your soul is not even sensitive? You see? So that sensitivity that we have in the name Belial is the same that you have in the nature of the Lawama, the person who feels the burden of accusation. And we know most of us don't like to be accused by our society. You know, we want to be approved. We want approval. We want to be accepted. We don't want to be accused. Now, if somebody can become so insensitive in their makeup that they don't even care whether they're accused or not, don't even care whether they're accepted or not, don't care about what the other people think about them, and they can do some awful, terrible things. Yes. And there is a mind in the world that believes to achieve your ends, you can't be bothered with moral questions. To achieve your ends, you have to dismiss all moral sentiment. You can't be Belial. You can't be Belalian. Belalian means having that nature of Belial. You see? You can't be Belalian. You can't be a lemon. You know, a lemon is something that has a great amount of sugar. A lot of us don't know that. In science, they tell you that. A lemon is a fruit with a great amount of sugar, but its acid is so bitter that it dominates. So when you taste it, you taste nothing but bitterness. Taste just bitterness. But you like it, don't you? Little children, you cut a little piece of lemon for a little child, you know, and the little child suck on the lemon. Why they like it? They like it because it has sweet. The sweet is in there. And though they taste the bitterness, the sweet is there too. And the senses know the sweet is there. So they like the lemon because the sweet is there. If there wasn't no sweet there, they wouldn't like the lemon. They don't want the bitter without sweet. But the bitter with the sweet make them like it. They like it. And the wise people have used certain objects as symbols for ideas that they have. So the lemon has been used as an idea, representation of that bitter and sweetness that is in our taste. Human being feels regret, but he dislikes regret at the same time. He gives in to repentance, but he doesn't like to be sad. But he'll become sad in his repentant state, right? He become very sad and weep sometimes some terribly. But he doesn't like sadness, but at that time, the little bitter is good for him. And after weeping, he begins to feel relieved. He's relieved by it. And he becomes even sweeter, right? Sometimes he becomes even sweeter, you see, after that repentant stage. Then some give themselves to self-pity to extreme. And they weep and they weep and they weep in self-pity. And instead of coming out sweet, they come out more bitter. Very bitter. They may even harden up to where they have no sympathy for anybody. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Crying your own blues can make you hard if you stay in there too long. You know, you got to know when to pull out of that. You know, pull out. So let me get myself together. I got obligations. You stay in it too long, you get hard. You become hardened to everything but yourself. And that's mentioned in the Quran. that there come a time when people will not care for mom, dad, sister, brother, husband, wife, daughter, son. They won't care. They won't feel any obligation. They will be so wrapped up in their own affairs that they'll be heedless of others. This is the Quran. It's good to know yourself, and you can better manage yourself when you know yourself. And Allah wants us to know ourselves. That's why He revealed the knowledge. He wants us to know ourselves. A big problem we have in this world is a belief that the best way to protect the welfare, the general welfare, is to become insensitive and do whatever you must do at any cost to preserve the order of the establishment. So there come times when you have to sacrifice principles that you worked very carefully and very tediously to build up. You have to tear down those principles, tear them down, and put new ideas in the people's minds that will accommodate what you have to do for the situation, you know. And this is the kind of world we live in, where even morals are manipulated. Yes. They give you a set of morals today for this situation, this time. Now, next year, it might be a different demand. So they give you a new set of morals. You tear down one of those that they gave you before and give you a new set. We thank Allah we don't have to live in a situation like that. We thank Allah that we have a religion that accommodates all of our needs. We don't have to go to the world for life. Our life is in our religion. And that's what Muslims should know. And non-Muslims, they can benefit from it, whether they be Muslims or not. They can benefit from knowing that. But Muslims should know, and Muslims should obey what their religion requires or asks of them. In the beginning of the 20th century, a new idea was brought in to keep the life of the Western world in pretty workable form. That idea is called in the dictionary expressionism. 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 And it was an idea that was used in the field of art, expression. And what they did was direct the artist to express in his art everything that goes on in the person, in the inner, in the inward form of the person. So what you experience in your thoughts, you know, what you think privately, express this outwardly in art. So that was a way of stripping the human being, making him naked. Naked in a sinful way. Present him in art, completely nude. Without an effort to educate, it wasn't an effort to educate now. This is just purely for entertainment, purely for the gratification of the senses. To present this in art and art. There is another form that has as its object the correction of moral attitudes. And they will depict in art many things that happen within our private, within the private sphere of the individual. In order to shame the individual and shame the society out of its unbecoming behavior or conduct. That's a different form. But then the expressionism is not that form. Expressionism is bringing it out just for the sake of excitement, just for the sake of attracting people, exciting people, capturing the interest. You see? So as a result, the art of the Western world became really shameful art. Shameful art. That appealed to the lower mind of the individual. Nudity, perversion, cruelty. Freakishness, abnormal appetite, abnormal behavior. Everything that was possible for the individual to conceive, the artist was directed to put that, make that visual so that everybody could see it. I think that's pretty devilish. That was a pretty wicked thing to do, especially if they were believers in God, because God gave us a privacy, and he said that that privacy is sacred, and no one should invade that privacy. That privacy is between the individual and his Lord. It is not to be exposed to the society. That's respect for the individual. Does anyone want all of his shame disclosed? No. No sensible person wants all of his shame disclosed. But this is the effort of Satan to discredit the human being. Yes, that was his promise. That he would go out to prove man not deserving of the high station that God gave him. That was his promise, that he would go out to prove man unworthy. And the language that Iblis used in the Quran let us know that he thought us to be a despicable thing. Say, this that you have fashioned in the shape of stinky mud, saying that the mortal man is just stinky earth, that the only mind capable of anything worthwhile is one that does not give himself to the influences of moral man. To sentiment or to moral conscience. That was his attitude. And he went about to prove that man that is motivated by that kind of nature is worthless, inferior, worthless. There is another ism, also a creation of Western society, or made popular by Western society in this day and time, this history, is sensualism. Sensualism. Now we know that we have senses that we would like to have gratified. If we feel pain in the stomach from hunger, we want to eat to gratify that need, to satisfy that appetite, to rest that pain or that aggravation that we call hunger. If we have an urge for sex, we like to have that rested in gratification of that appetite. So man is a sensorial being in his makeup. He is influenced by senses in the biological form or in his physical form. But the devil, he goes out to exploit that need and make it a burden too great for the man to carry it. Then the man becomes a subject of his own nature, a captive of his own nature. That's the work of Satan. We're not talking about any spook somewhere. We're not talking about Satan that Walt Disney created or Sinbad the Sailor created or something like that. No. We're talking about real life matters. So there was born an ism, sensualism. And the idea that to gratify your senses, your physical senses, or the senses generally, but mainly speaking from the physical point of view, that to gratify the senses is the highest good. The highest good. Now think about Western society. Think about the life that we have, we call Western world or Western society. Haven't it advanced these things? And haven't life been dominated and oppressed by the advancement of these things that we're talking about right now? It ain't enough to just have sex like your instincts urge you to. They have to use their liberated faculties of reasoning to make inventions after their imagination and create for you life behavior that you'll never, that your nature never asked for. You know, the American Indian, I was in prison for selective service violation. At that time, you know, we didn't go to army. In the days of the Temple of Islam, we didn't go to army. And so I was, I applied for conscientious objector status. I got it. They ordered me to go do hospital work then. As a conscientious objector, they say, well, go do hospital work. So they ordered me to go to Elgin State Hospital to do work as a conscientious objector. I refused that too, because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't seem to favor it. He didn't say don't do it, but he didn't seem to favor it, so we obeyed him, you know. In the days of the temple, that's what the way it was. So we didn't do it, so they sent me to jail in Sandstone, Minnesota, Federal Correctional Institution. Nice little mild place, a good rest stop, really. They sent me there, and there I met Indians, because that's up near the Dakota, you know. So I met a lot of Indians up there. And one Indian, he told me, he said, you know, we knew nothing about oral sex until the white man came to this land. I said, I thought it was like that.
That man will naturally find his way home. They know that. Have a lark created a bird without the knowledge to get home? He made the bird knows how to go home. The bird know how to follow its path of excellence. It come here knowing nothing, and pretty soon it's doing the things that the grown-ups do. Female bird makes its nest, does a good job. Raise her children, a good job. Give them the carriage to go to the wind, to go to the air, take flight. Lead them in the path of the air. Yes. She knows the path of her excellence. How come the human being can't find the path to his excellence? It is because the manipulator stands in the way. Separate his intelligence from his sensitivities. Deprive his life of the support from his instincts. So he can't find his way back home. I wish this Western society knew just how much they have been tricked. If they would recognize that, they would immediately say, La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, and say, go to hell, David Ben-Gurion. Go to hell, Menachem Begin. We're going to drive your Jacobites out of our system. Yeah, they would say that. But they were carefully led upon a wrong path by the renegade Jew. So that they would become a good tool for the renegade Jew, who didn't want to follow Moses. He wanted to do his own thing. He got the wisdom from Moses, then conceived himself to be God. And Begin has that mentality. A joke was made in the paper. I have the clipping at home. It was sent to me. See, in the White House, Reagan, he has a blue phone and a red phone. A red one, a hotline to Russia. So there's anything go wrong in their relations, and there's a danger anticipated, they can make a quick call and iron the matter out, or at least get the truth of the matter before making any high-risk moves. And a blue phone there, and they say, what's the blue phone for? So that's the God, that's the phone to God. You said it costs about $4.25 to make that phone call. And the same writer that was writing must be a Jacobite. He wouldn't know how to use this kind of symbolism if he wasn't a Jacobite. $4.25 means something. So, he said that it was discovered that, I'm not quoting the article verbatim now, but I'm giving you the article, in summary in my own language, using most of their language though. Said, in other words, I'm not changing the meanings at all.
I just can't recall all the words, so I can't give you all those unnecessaries that's in there. I'm giving you the main part of it. So he said that they noticed that Begin had the same phones. He had a red phone and a blue phone. And when they asked him about his blue phone, he said the same thing. It's the God. And they asked how much it cost, how much his phone call cost. He said, it cost 10 cents. There's a local call here. Now, if that ain't saying that God is in that locality, a local call means God is in this locality. Now, if God is in that locality, tell me, when Reagan calls God, who does he call? He calls Begin. At least that's what the Jacobite's saying. Yes. But don't worry, Muslims. 1,400 years or so ago, Allah said, on that day we shall gather the guilty blue. Yes, that Zulqa'ah, the guilty blue. Aren't you glad you came? Yeah. I know I am. And I don't think you understood what I meant. Let's see. Another mistake, misconception on the part of the Western man. After the Jacobite put them on to scriptural wisdom, when the Quranic message came, they grabbed the Quran just like they did the old scriptures of the Jacobites. And they went into it independently, thinking that they had keys and clues enough to decipher anything in the book. And they came up with many misconceptions. So many of them honestly believe that the Islamic movement, the movement of Al-Islam, is the movement of Satan. I'm telling you the truth. They honestly believe that the movement of Al-Islam is the movement of Satan. That Al-Islam is the black devil. That's exactly what many of them believe. They think because Muslims kiss the black stone, see, black in their theology means instinct, the nature of the living matter. Natural law and instinct, the nature of matter. They think that's what the black stone represents. Then they identify that with their concept of the same nature, the same instinct in their theology. And their theology is called the Satan. That's why they say man is born in sin. That you can't be right coming out of nature. The only way to get right is by an unnatural procedure, or unnatural happening. And that is the birth of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ's birth is not natural. So unnatural birth makes possible the redemption of man, natural man. Is that clear? I think it's crystal clear. clearer than sunshine. That's right. Talking to you preachers sitting down out there. Yes. So they made a misinterpretation. They misinterpreted. And they conceived wrongly the idea in our religion and identify us with the movement of Satan. So they think the Antichrist is a Muslim. They actually think that. Don't you be mistaken now. They actually think that the Antichrist is Muhammad and his followers. Because he represents the natural man. And that leader is the unnatural man. In their conception, we know better as Muslims. But they conceive Jesus to be the unnatural man. He is the God-man, divine man. Conceived not by natural process, but conceived immaculately, and immaculate means for them divinely, without agency or without the use of man or male sperm. Right? Now some of you say, well, we believe the same, but Imam, yes, we do. But on the level of theology, and I ain't gonna say no more to you spooks today. I'm talking about the ones from overseas. Oh, they kissing that black stone. One writer had the nerve to write on the black stone as a deity of heathen, pagan, Muslim. And he associated with devil worship. Yeah. And you ask anyone who knows Christian theology, ask him what color do they say Satan is. They'll tell you black. They say he's the black devil, the black angel. The black angel. And by black angel, they mean he followed natural law. The white angel follows divine law. The black angel follows natural law. So since Prophet Muhammad came and established the Muslim society on the pattern of nature and on the pattern of natural law, they said he must be the devil. They said Muhammad is the Satan, and his movement is the Satan. They are the Antichrist. Our religion is so accepted in the world and so dignified in the world because of intelligent men. These people that believe that way, they can't come out openly against us, because they're afraid that the world of intelligent people all over the globe will laugh at them. Say, you all just as pagan as you were 1,000 years ago. You know, the Western mind still have that same old narrow thought in there, but he can't come out with it boldly because he knows the intelligent world will laugh at it. But secretly they're passing the word. Muhammad and his followers represent the movement of Satan, the Antichrist. And many of our Bilalian brothers and sisters, many of the African-American brothers and sisters, they want to be with us, but they can't because they have put that kind of fear in them. Have them thinking that we represent the Antichrist. No, we're not going to be here all day, just a little while. Don't worry. Now, before going to our next
term for discussion here. Let's look at something else that's going on. You know, this must be the right day. I believe Scripture says when the right time comes, things that were closed will be opened. Things hidden manifest. Things kept above your head brought down to earth. And I can go on and on and on to tell you what Scripture says in this direction. This next scheme that I'm referring to is this effort to kill the liberating process that began in my lifetime. See, I'm not quite 50, I'm 48. And most of you my age, you have witnessed a liberation process in your day and time. It came in with the new rise of science. Scientific discoveries, scientific inventions. The early 20th century brought in a lot of new things. Science began to just blossom and bloom. Film industry, theater, sound films, radio, automobile, electric light, telephone. Practically everything modern came about in that time, didn't it? Right in one little time period. We don't have to look back far. Some of our grandmothers would tell us, no, we didn't have that. Right? Say, did you have car? No, didn't have no car. No radio, no telephone. No electric light. So this is recent development. And along with that rise in science came also a rise in ideologies. New ideologies that represented a liberation movement. Old ideas were questioned. Old attitudes were condemned. Many new scientists like John Dewey came up advocating a different moral idea, a new respect for the individual person, a new respect for the masses. Yes, and it wasn't long before communism came, wouldn't it? See how the Jacobite created his thing to check? Uh-oh, science has opened the eyes of the social man. It is making him come into scientific development as a social man. He can't apply. We can't allow them to apply science to social life. If we do, and if that's made free and available to all of them, it'll be over for us. So right away, they had to invent communism, Marxism. Marxism was born. That was in the early 20th century too, wasn't it? Yeah. And it was a fast-moving thing. It was moving as though it had to hurry up a life and death matter. Yeah, Marxism wasn't no slow movement. Isms that changed a whole state, the life of whole nations,
They usually come in kind of slow. They gradually come in and gradually catch on. But Marxism was a real fast movement because they had to check the scientific movement of the social man so he would not be liberated. And you are made to think just the opposite. They want us to think that Marxism was a movement to liberate the common man, to liberate the worker, to liberate the common man, to bring true freedom and democracy to the common person, liberate his senses. That's what we were made to believe. Now, in order to discover their lie, all you have to do is look at what they claim and test what they produce in the light of what they claim. The arguments are simple. Arguments are not complicated. A good, intelligent argument are simple. Argument, the point of argument is brevity. When you're just talking, you know that's not arguing. What you call arguing is spitting on each other. That ain't arguing. That's not the original meaning of argument. You just spitting on each other. You said that. You get out of my face. You saw so you. And he haven't got on the argument yet. Just cursing each other. No. The object of true argument is to make it short, to eliminate a whole lot of unnecessaries, get right to the point. So I repeat, real argument is simple. We don't have to get 1,000 books and stack them up here. So who did you quote that time, Brother Imam? Where's that quote? What chapter? What page? What is it? What paragraph? What line? Who said it? When? What day was it? What were the circumstances? That's designed for lawyers so that they can prolong the job and get more money. Ain't necessary. That's why the Holy Quran is called a concise book. Short passages, right to the point, and yet it's the argument. It's called also the argument. I'm telling you, he's in bad shape. Yes. So this particular problem that we're talking about now, we're going to explain it in just a few minutes. Karl Marx used to bring in this ism, and everybody knows Karl Marx was a Jew. That ain't no secret. Karl Marx was a Jew. All right? What a Jew looked like bringing in an idea that dismissed the existence of God. What did you look like doing that? No Jew's supposed to do nothing like that. God has proven his wonders to them more than to any other people, they say. And then they give birth to sons that introduce atheism. Materialism without the fear of God, without respect for God. Dismiss God completely. Doesn't sound right, does it? No. No. Because he's a renegade Jew. In fact, I don't think Marx was the renegade Jew. I think Marx was manipulated by the renegade Jew. See, the renegade Jew that really does the thing, he can never come out where you can touch him. You never can put your hand on him. The one he sent out, you can put your hand on him, but the one who sent him out, never can you touch him. He never allowed himself to be identified. They considered themselves to be too precious, too valuable for such risk. Mars could have been shot. They won't risk that man that has the secret science. They won't risk him out here to be identified and shot or hung. No. That dude may be selling you some goods in Marshall Field and going home like an ordinary citizen. Sure, you never know. Yeah, so Marxism came in, and the communists make the claim that Marxism is socialism. They claim that communism is socialism. Okay, now that's a false claim. And it doesn't take much to disprove it. Socialism doesn't buy charge words like brother and use it over the head of people. True socialism, it gives you brotherhood with substance. What kind of brotherhood? They call each other brother, you know that? The Marxists, see, the communists, they call each other brothers. They embrace like we do, embrace like the Muslims, call each other brother. But it doesn't mean any more than Jeff Ford saying assalamu alaikum and shaking hand like a Muslim. Yeah, Jeff Ford. He shake hand, he say assalamu alaikum, and brother. But Jeff Ford is a hoodlum. Yeah, Jeff Ford is a common hoodlum. And so are the leaders of Marxism, communism. They're nothing but common hoodlums. I mean the true leaders. I ain't talking about their dupes. They have plenty of dupes. Plenty of people that's fascinated, charmed. They can't see beneath the veil. Or should I say curtain? I think they call it curtain. The same thing as a veil. Yeah, they can't see behind it, so they accept the fascination that's on the surface. They claim to be socialists because they came to organize life in group patterns. This group in this area, they have their work cut out for them. They have their leaders that they account to, and they create a whole lot of little groups. And originally they were called communes, I believe. Yes. And they call that a social program, social life. And to each, according to his needs, and from each, according to his ability. Is that right? Yeah, that's their principle. To each, according to his needs, from each, according to his ability. They call that social life. But read their literature, read their ideology, and see if you see any social life in it. There ain't no social life in it. They have actually extirpated social life, uprooted it, took it out completely, and they have replaced that with mechanical life. Materialistic mechanical life. Tell me, what's the difference between the materialist
that called himself the proletariat or whatever he called himself, his ruling body, or the capitalists over here. One take all, one harnesses all the energies, all the means of production, and then dictate life for the citizens, and put great strain on social life.